Service Radio.
Go get going now. Get out before they find you.
Dad, I love you.
I know you do, son. I love you too.
Boys! Avenge me! Avenge me!
The other day we were trying to think of Harry Dean Stanton movies, and we're like, yeah. Oh, let's IMDb. I was like, or we could just text Jason. And you did rattle him off about as quickly as we could IMDb him.
Oh, he's one of my favorites, man. One
that was a clip from Red Dawn.
It's one of his shining moments.
Yeah, that's probably his best acting, I think, that he ever accomplished.
I'll refrain.
That was a Patrick Swayze classic from our Friday series of all Patrick Swayze movies this month, right?
Yeah.
It's American Hero, I guess.
Yeah, I guess that was the logic behind that.
We've been gone.
Yeah. I guess. We don't know.
So we were gone last week. We're the Sun Cinema podcast.
Welcome.
And David miraculously did a podcast without us that was actually enlightening and informative.
All right.
That was very good.
So
very,
I fell asleep, good. But
I tuned out after he quit talking about me.
Yeah.
But up till then, it was sparkling.
Yeah. No, Robin and Mariel were great replacements for us. So
yeah,
can't wait till Jack cans us and just does a podcast with them.
Right.
But
it's coming.
We are the Sun Cinema Podcast. Yeah. Give it to us.
We are a weekly radio show that examines the highs and lows of the art of film through the filtered lens of Washington, D.C.'s only privately owned art house cinema. And I am your host, Jason Cawley. I'm joined by my co-host and proprietors of Sun Cinema, David Cabrera and Ryan Hunter Mitchell. Gentlemen, how are we doing, Dave?
Still got it, man. That was
still
good.
Still got it.
Yeah. You aced that.
You really do.
Even after a couple of weeks off.
Yeah. And we have a special guest in studio.
We do have a very special guest.
Max. Hey, everybody. It's good to be here for definitely the first time.
Yeah.
Definitely.
100%. This is such a lovely studio. I was saying before, it kind of smells like burnt popcorn in here. I don't know if you're getting that.
And again, I still think you're having a stroke.
But like a very fun stroke, like stroke at the movies.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Yeah.
That would be such a bummer if you didn't know you were having a stroke because you were at the movies just smelling our burnt popcorn.
What a way to go.
So Max, you come to Sons.
Yeah.
That's how we know you, right?
Yeah.
That's your
I used to bartend down the road, and I would come at like 1:30 in the morning and get off my shift and drink Malort.
Yeah.
And
all right.
Listen to
free advertisement right
there. It's a real gamer.
They should be paying us.
Brought to you by Malort.
Yeah. It's like regret, sincere regret in a bottle. And I keep doing it, though. So, yeah. I met David first, and then I met you later on.
Yeah, and then now Jason for the first time.
Yeah, for the first time. Hello. Hey, Jason. Was it? Hey.
Max.
They just shook hands.
Very good. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for illustrating.
I know you explained the month really well without us, but let's hear it again. Give us what's July? The month is Red, White, and Blue Steel.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
What the F? Yeah, so I guess the idea was to do American movies, but also movies that are red, white, and blue in color, and revolutionary movies for, you know, July the 4th. Yeah, I think that was basically.
Yeah, and I mean, it does like
actually Jason's idea.
Hmm.
We were just spitballing
titles, right?
Some titles for the month.
But that really kind of, that brought us somewhere.
It did. It definitely made it easier to just make it a little looser.
Yeah, because we had been...
You don't have to explain it so much when they're like, oh, red, white, and blue, steel. Yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
I'm in.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Whatever. You guys,
whatever that means.
You guys are idiots.
For July 4th and then a pun. Yeah.
Yeah,
because we've been trying to toss around ideas on like how to make something of a playoff of a patriotic month or something. I think this really, the blue steel really tied together because we tried just colors for a minute.
Yeah,
and we couldn't with quite get there.
Yeah,
it was a little forced.
Yeah, we also thought about doing like a very American month. Uh-huh. But that felt weird too.
Yeah,
just like a bunch of
no one
like
wants to
John Wayne movies
right now.
Classic Americana stuff.
But this like does let us do that.
We could have done that.
You're not showing any like westerns or anything.
Never mind.
Tune in. A few weeks.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe we will do westerns.
We've done Red Sun. That was cool.
Yeah, we could have done Red Sun this one.
Oh yeah, that would have been perfect. Yeah.
Or next one.
Yeah. So give us start off with Sundays because this looks nice. What are Sundays?
Yeah. So Sundays are all art house classics. We're doing the Krzysztof Kieslowski trilogy, Blue, White, and Red, the Three Colors trilogy. Each movie has a different story with different characters. They do take place in the same time period because there are clips in each movie where there's like some random scene from a different perspective.
Right.
From a different movie in the trilogy. We started with Blue. Blue is probably the best one.
Yeah, it's my favorite by far.
I think Red is probably the second best.
I would say so too.
White is good. Blue, they just like play with the colors like beautifully.
And you get to look at Julia Binoche like, in prime for 2 hours. You know?
Yeah.
And she's amazing in it.
Yeah. And then, so Blue, White, Red, the first three Sundays, The Red Shoes, which is a famous Michael Powell ballet flick.
And it's one of my favorite films.
Technicolor, a Technicolor dream, if you will. And then Blue is the Warmest Colors, the final Sunday. Also, beautiful movie.
And something a little newer. I like it.
Totally.
Modern twist to that whole theme.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Mondays are all closed.
Mondays are still
glorious.
Tuesdays are a bunch of revolutionary movies, right? Yeah. So tonight we're doing this movie called The Red and the White, which is about Hungarian communists aiding the Bolsheviks' defeat of the Tsarists, the Whites. This is in like 1919. It's pretty brutal. I haven't seen it, but it's...
Yeah, I have not seen it.
It's supposed to be a big pacifist film.
It's right? A big... Yeah.
No, when you say a big pacifist film, you mean like the standpoint of the whole film is like, oh, war is terrible and you should always stay out?
Okay. Yes.
Huh. Yeah. It's actually just a bunch of pacifists talking.
Pacifists being like, should we help?
I don't know.
It's the Reds versus the Whites. It's kind of, you know.
Pacifist Rim.
Yeah.
That's so bad.
Ooh.
Move on.
The spook is
a bunch of giant robots that
you've
won't
got
fight.
30 seconds in the box, man. You can't talk.
Excessive punnery.
The following Tuesday is the 17th. The Spook Who Sat by the Door is a blaxploitation film about the first like black CIA guy, and they hire him and they regret it because he fucks up everything like in a good way.
It's right.
Yeah, he overthrows everything and
right. Yeah. There's a poster for in the Spy Museum. Actually,
cool.
Yeah, and like the representations in the 60s and 70s of the spy genre. And I'm like walking through and there's, you know, all these other like classic, you know, spy and noir films of that era. And then you get to this one and the caption underneath is like, you know, Hollywood was not always very kind to spies. And I was like, this, wow. Wow, you can't say that. That's not okay at all. Yeah.
The following Tuesday is a movie called Can Dialectics Break Bricks, which is a 1973 movie that is about it's like situationalist philosophy, but it's the original film is a film called Crush. It's a martial arts film from 1972, and it's been dubbed over with situationalist philosophy.
I feel like you dug deep this month for some of these things.
One has actually been on the radar. I just didn't know where to put it.
Where to throw it.
And it works really well in this month because it's like a kung fu movie about...
An anti-colonialist.
Yeah, it's Koreans revolting against
Japanese occupation.
Wow. Right. But then they just tie in... They make all the raconteuring this esoteric philosophy. Like, so It looks pretty damn funny.
Yeah, I think that'll be a. I think everyone that class comes out. Struggle. I think everyone that comes out for that will be interesting people.
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure. And then the last one is a grin without a cat, or a cat without a. It's a grin without a cat.
Grin without a cat. Yeah, like a Cheshire cat.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
Have you seen one?
Yeah. Have you?
Ooh. A grin without a cat.
Just walked by. It's a Chris Marker film, same guy that did La Jetée or La Jetée. He's a French guy.
He did like La Jetée was like the what 12 Monkeys is based on.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been throwing this one on and just like passing out to it. It's really cool. It's just like
an essay, basically.
This is the one you said that was about the death of all the leftist movements in the late 60s.
It's kind of chronicling the end of
that radical
the 60s,
leftism.
Early 70s. Just left like the death of Che. I think Czechoslovakia in 68. Yeah. Like, it's all pretty interesting. There's that one still from it that's just like a young woman at a protest. It seems that she's being interviewed and it just says, "Now we just feel guilty that we didn't act in time." It's like pretty deep for right now.
Yeah, very resonant, very trenchant right now.
And then Wednesdays.
Yeah, I was going to say, should we go do something?
Yeah, let's go. You know, fuck this. What are we doing in the podcast
it's nice
room?
The Wednesday nights are all interesting and fun. This upcoming Wednesday tomorrow, we are doing Slurpee Day.
What's the date?
7/11.
Oh god.
Every time I hear that bell, it reminds me of It's Always Sunny.
Yeah. It's just, that's true. I never thought of that.
For the opening theme.
Yeah, because there's always the ding at the very beginning. Yeah. Anyway, so we got a slushy machine at Sun Cinema, and we are going to make some boozy slushies and watch some old commercials and 7-Eleven things. And
I've got tons of like kids and animals getting brain freezes. I found a lot of those videos. Those
just
will be
like
kind of
a montage of brain freezes.
That'll be yeah.
When you search for that, you're like, oh, I'm gonna have to cut together so many hours. Oh, it's already done. Oh, okay,
yeah, it's done.
6 hour loop of brain freeze.
6 hour loop.
Dope.
There done.
So many. It's like goats getting.
Thank you, internet.
Yeah, right. Like someone else had that idea a while ago.
Did the work for me.
Yeah.
The 18th is Summer Slash with Donna and Jax, Wet Hot American Summer.
Expect some fun.
Bound to be very fun. Last time we did Sleepaway Camp, that was one of the most fun nights, I think, we've had.
So good.
So they'll be doing an episode of Are You Afraid of the Dark, I believe, and then a brief drag show, and then
the movie.
Yeah, then the movie. And then the following Wednesday is White Dog, presented by Pharaoh Hawk.
Oof.
Wet Dog is a controversial Samuel Fuller movie from the early 80s about a racist dog. It was initially...
And not in like a heartwarming Disney way.
Right.
No.
Where the dog learns to not be racist at the end of the film.
Spoiler.
Yeah.
Well, I assumed it's not by Disney, right?
Right.
You know, like the dog doesn't find like a black fox friend and it's like, well, maybe...
I had it all wrong.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not spoiling the movie, I promise.
Yeah.
I have no idea what happens. It's all a wild guess.
It's controversial because it was NAACP was not about it at first.
Right.
Why not?
Because it's about a racist dog chasing black people, I think.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go. When you say it like that.
Yeah. But it does have a very strong like anti-racist message. So, it is a very good movie. It's hard to
Tarek puts it on like The Raven, right?
Yeah, he puts it on all the time. But it's another one of those right up his alley things that's controversial. Anyways.
There's just randomly footage in Raven of a dog chasing black people on the TV.
Only like three people there notice what's going on that
TV. Yeah, because every so often I look up and it'll be like a 1940s like Mexican, you know, like romance era film or like Boys in the Hood or something like that.
Right.
I'm like, okay.
To clarify, to anyone in the city or any listeners who haven't been to the Raven, it's the oldest bar in Mount Pleasant. It's right down the street from us, and it's just your classic dive. It's a great bar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cash bar.
Cash only.
Yep.
Thursdays are all Doc's unique American stories.
Yeah.
Yeah. Woo. The fifth, we did OJ, yeah. Made in America.
All 9 hours.
No, we did...
two episodes?
No, we did three.
Wow.
We went till... we did like 4.5 hours or something like that.
Damn.
Nice.
Wow.
It's good, right?
Yeah, it's...
it's really good.
It's very complicated.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting how they juxtapose, like... yeah. Never mind.
It's so it's good. Like, yeah.
It's so well done. I still need to watch the rest. Scum Club presents Great. Yeah, I know. Scum Club presents Great Gardens. Scum Club is a thing put on by a friend of ours, Danielle Vu, who's a local musician. And
Scum, it was like a late 70s.
Based on the Scum Manifesto.
Late 70s feminist punk scene. Right?
Yeah. It's about killing men.
Cool.
Yeah, I think basically. But she usually does movies that, you know, either pass the Bechdel test or specifically don't.
Yeah.
As a sort of critique. So Grey Gardens is a really good doc about two people who are like descendants of...
of Kennedy. Of they're cousins of like...
cousins of Onassis. Of
Jackie Onassis.
Yeah. 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 Right. And they're pretty...
Big Edie and...
staunch characters. Yeah. They're very...
Big Edie.
They're so funny.
A little spooky.
The 19th is Los Sures. It's a short doc about Puerto Ricans in Brooklyn... and pre-gentrified Williamsburg. That night we may be doing something after as well with either Puerto Rican videos or music or something. We're still cool. Figuring that out. And hopefully, or definitely, some of the proceeds are going to go to, I think, Friends of Puerto Rico is where we're landing. But anyways.
Whichever nonprofit we find to
pursue
the same goals that we hope for.
Yes. Right? 26 is The King of Kong, which is...
I think it's a great movie. It's a good doc.
Yeah.
You've seen it, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, it's just a funny circumstance, but it plays really well with this like good and evil narrative.
And you guys are aware of what has changed since.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, I don't... I really... I mean, I know where you're going. This is like, it's...
it's a big cheater.
Right. There was... the whole thing was like falsified to some degree, but...
yeah.
What? No, really?
Yeah.
You didn't know that?
No, I had... well, I just...
oh, you're talking about Billy Mitchell, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, if you watch the movie, it plays fine into the extended narrative of the story.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it... to me, like, I don't know that I've seen it in a minute, but I don't know how... when I received that information, it didn't affect how I felt about the film.
No, you hate... that Billy Mitchell is just a smug prick in the movie.
Right.
And the other guy is, like... a guy you're rooting for, and it's,
yeah.
They're just both competing for the Guinness Book of World Records highest score on Donkey Kong,
right?
Yeah.
And it's pretty fun, and like very uniquely American.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
Fridays are all Swayze movies. We did Red Dawn; that was incredibly fun. It was a really good crowd that no one came to see that seriously, and that was good.
Nobody came to see Red Dawn
to see it. To watch it seriously.
Oh, right, yeah. Right. Just to come have fun. Yeah.
And yeah, then Dirty Dancing.
Coming up this week, right?
Nobody Puts Baby in a Corner.
That's such a good movie.
Yeah.
Can I just Jerry say I'm Orban. Having the time of my life?
Yeah.
You guys?
Then we're doing Roadhouse. I mean.
Need we say more?
Kind of a snooze. Yeah.
You should... Do you want a bouncer for the night?
Oh, that would be so cool.
Yeah, I'll be the bouncer.
Do you have a tank top?
I do. I can even sort of push my beard back into a mullet if you want.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Nice. Okay, good.
It's long enough now that we'll just, yeah.
Yeah, we should have a bouncer for Roadhouse.
The following Friday is Point Break.
One of my favorites.
He's all sort
it's
of
so good.
Go without
Gary Busey cinematic
man.
Debut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. And and just Gary Busey. It's worth watching for Busey.
Yeah. I mean,
really his best role.
He
Forget
Buddy
Holly.
Maybe Ginger Dead Man, but
maybe.
It's a tight race.
Tight
no matter what you say, it's a tight race.
So Saturdays are just kind of random blue, white, and red. I don't know. American Graffiti on we did. I neither of us
neither
watched
of us
that.
Watched it. Yeah, it's a cool movie.
No, it's a great movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's one
Young
of the
Harrison
first
Ford.
Films that had like a real. I mean, it was the same year as Mean Streets, and Mean Streets didn't really get the kind of credit for it that
soundtrack
it deserved. Yeah, but the soundtrack is
it's real good.
It was the first I remember this, or reading this, I don't know how true this is, but I did read this at one point in time, that it was the first screenplay that had the soundtrack per scene, like, written in, like, we're going to open with, you know, this from, you know, pick your artist, whoever, you know, at the time. But
Mean Streets or?
Yeah. No, American Graffiti.
Okay, okay. Were you saying Mean Streets did something similar?
Mean Streets, the same year, did the same thing. And
just
used
didn't
a
get
lot
as
of,
much credit
it. It didn't get as much credit for it because it wasn't as big of a, you know, American
phenomenon.
Americana kind of, yeah, and it didn't have that kind of phenomenon that
Which
American
Graffiti
Which is
weird because it definitely has, like, looking back, the potential
to have been
a smash.
Keitel's.
Yeah, and so it's like young De Niro. Like, he looks like a teenager.
Cool. Let's just make this about Mean Streets. Yeah. That movie is so good.
It is so good.
Even better music.
Yeah.
No Wolfman Jack, though.
Right, no Wolfman Jack. Just a ton of great rock and roll, mainly Rolling Stones tracks.
Yeah, American Graffiti is a good first Saturday of our somewhat American month. It's got cars. It's got cool rock and roll
I just
music.
Love it. Now I have to explain the next one, which is Pierrot Le Feu.
This is weird, right?
But it's one of my favorite Godard films.
Yeah, it's great. It's a French film, and it's Bastille Day, and it is very blue, white, and red. Those colors are
pretty
vibrant, prominent throughout. Totally. Yeah. One of the first movies we did as a movie night when Ryan and I were living in the same place, and we had a friend who was really drunk, and he sort of. You know, 30 minutes into the movie, you just kind of like yelled out. He's like, this movie is weird, right?
Like, I'm not just drunk. Like, no one else is following this, right?
Yeah. Great film. Then the 21st, the Blue Steel part of the Red, White, and Blue Steel. It's not the film Blue Steel, but Zoolander.
Oh, not the Jamie Lee Curtis 1990... You know, winter take.
I was waiting.
Yeah, Blue Steel with Jamie Lee Curtis.
Oh, of course.
I was waiting for you to finish the year. I was like, 90 what?
I think it's 1990.
Oh, it is 1990.
Yeah,
perfect.
I think it is. I'll look
God
it up.
Damn.
Why did I doubt you?
It could be, no. I could totally be wrong, but I think it's 1990. It's somewhere right in there.
You could be totally wrong.
So Zoolander.
But you haven't been.
No, it's 1990.
Okay.
Yeah. Still got it.
Blue Steel.
So Zoolander, one of the better David Bowie vehicles on film.
Sure.
Right.
Billy Zane is great in it.
Oh, yeah.
It's got
something for everybody.
It's got a bit of everything.
Yeah. And then the final week, we're doing just a fun night, right?
Yeah, we're doing last day of camp.
Last day of camp.
How does that work?
Well, Fail University had problems coordinating this month.
Yeah, they're taking the summer off.
They're taking the summer off.
Okay.
I don't blame them. I mean, that's what universities do. It would have been nice before we printed the goddamn calendars.
If you're listening.
We're just going to do a last day of camp party. We'll like have on a bonfire and a bunch of dumb camp movies and sleepaway camp scenes, a bunch of stuff on the screen.
Oh, very cool.
Just play some cool
nice
music. Hopefully it'll be a nice summer night. Go on a night hike.
Just every hour on the hour, walk through with a guitar and sing Kumbaya.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need a guy for that too, actually.
Fortunately, my beard also doubles as a guitar, so you'll be fine.
Can you tune that thing to a G?
Perfect. I mean, I guess that's the month.
That's it. We did it.
Well, I've been wanting to take a dig at MoviePass and really try to understand them.
Yeah, it's been a conversation we've been having off and on for a while.
Yeah, I've been using MoviePass a lot and shit-talking them a lot. Maybe we could take a little breather. Do you have that Silicon Valley clip?
I sure do.
Play that for a second, and then we'll...
I'm here with Pied Piper CEO Richard Hendricks and newly minted COO Jared Dunn. Today's a big day for you. Tell me what your new internet is and why Gavin Belson should be afraid of it.
Manure.
Pardon?
Oh, weird. Okay, well, that went straight to Jared.
I'm sure you're aware of the Great London Horse Manure Crisis of 1894.
I'm afraid I'm not.
In the 1890s, the Industrial Revolution had people flocking to the city, and more people equals more horses, and more horses equals more manure. And it was predicted that by the middle of the next century, there would be 9 feet of manure covering the streets. But what no one saw coming was a new technology that would completely obliterate those concerns. The car. Overnight, the manure problem vanished, and the internet, as we currently know it, is rife with identity theft and spam and hacking. So it's manure. And we believe that in success, our new, entirely decentralized internet will be just as significant as the car.
Huh. Now back to me for my theme park analogy.
Thanks for coming in, guys. Up next.
What?
Jared, I don't know if you guys watched Silicon Valley, oh, yeah, but it's a good show.
Mike Judge doesn't really like have a... Well, he did that stupid, that other animated show after he stopped King of the Hill. But other than that, I think he's had a string of hits.
Yeah, he's even the ones that you think are like Idiocracy. When I first saw that, I was like, yeah, a little weak. It aged.
Terry Crews said the same thing, actually. Just like everybody shit on it when it first came out, but like...
Right.
Look where we are.
So, yeah. MoviePass. I think that maybe someone was seeing what maybe we're seeing, that there's like a problem in the film industry, and manure was building up or something. And I think MoviePass thinks of itself as the new decentralized internet from Silicon Valley that is here to fix all the problems in the
the movie ticketing industry.
Yeah, can you give us a quick rundown?
So, I'm going to try to give a quick, as concise as I can, rundown of... So, MoviePass. Here's what I've... When I heard of it last fall, people started telling me to get it. Here's a clip from a Forbes write-up on it. In case you haven't heard, MoviePass is a subscription service that offers users the ability to purchase one movie ticket a day, every day of the month, all paid for by the company. All the subscriber has to do is pay MoviePass a subscription fee of $9.95 at the start of each month and carry the company-issued MasterCard along with an app installed on their smartphone. You must be at the theater or within 100 yards of it anyway to purchase your ticket, and you must also have a viable signal on your phone in order to check in before the MasterCard will be authorized to pay for your ticket to the movie of your choice, Rob Kane.
But it sounds, I mean, that in and of itself, you're like, yeah, hey, I might be into that. You know, for $10 bucks a month, I go to two movies, it's paid for itself.
Absolutely. I go to one movie.
Yeah, I go to one movie, it's, exactly.
Yeah.
Especially.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So $10 a month, one movie. But there's something about how long and drawn on that description is. It is that simple. It is just, you pay $9.95 a month. But then caveats arise left and right as you're like trying to sign in.
It's like you can't go to like premiere weekends, and you can't go to like special screenings, things like that.
Right.
So, let's go back a little further. So, it turns out in 2011, MoviePass had started and was like...
Yeah, this is not a brand new thing. It's been around a minute. I had never heard of it. Yeah. I had not either, but it's been around for a minute.
And it had like maybe 18,000 subscribers, something small, up until like last year. Hmm. So, in 2011, this thing came out and there were small packages like three movies a month or $20. Or you could have unlimited, and it could be anywhere over the years from like $50 a month to $100 a month. Hmm. So
you got to watch a fair amount of movies.
Yeah,
to
you got
to
be a real.
If you're a real movie head, this thing could have been for you. It wasn't a steal, but like cool. It seems kind of reasonable.
It wasn't a total rip-off.
It's not a giant gamble. Yeah. It's a thing. Maybe it's for you. Maybe it isn't.
Yeah.
But once last year when they decided to like start changing the model, they got acquired by this analytics company last year called Helios and Matheson, and they're I don't know much about them, but they tried to come at this from an analytics angle of like, let's disrupt the movie industry and become, I don't know if they
become the decentralized internet, the car, the
See, that's how they kind of explain it. Like there's quotes from from Steve Lowe, I think his name is. Whatever the CEO
That's the
is.
CEO.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Whenever you're disrupting an industry, you're going to have things come up, he said. We're building an entertainment company. No one grows big and this fast without hiccups. But I don't even know if... From earlier like interviews with them last year, they're like, yeah, we're going to get this up to 40,000 subscribers. That was... They thought they were going to like double their subscriber base when they made it $10 a month.
Mm-hmm.
They got up... Within a couple months, they passed 1 million.
Right.
I mean, they grew way bigger. So I really think they weren't expecting to have 1 million people that they were going to be buying movie tickets for.
But once they had this hot product, it was suddenly like, oh, well, how can we leverage all of this new subscriber base?
I do think their goal was to, and things have come out to kind of corroborate this, I think their goal was like, hey, we can start monitoring how people buy tickets, at what time they get tickets, how does this model work. You know, a lot of people aren't going to see movies as much anymore. Like, that's why seats are getting bigger,
right?
And blah, blah, blah.
Tickets are getting more expensive,
but the numbers on these blockbusters now are nothing like how many people were going to see movies in the late 70s.
Which is crazy that, like, there's still, I mean, I guess adjusted for, like, inflation, maybe the original Star Wars, like, you know, original run was more than Avengers Infinity War did in its original run.
Yeah, and we looked this up, I don't know, a couple of months ago and saw, like, you look at something and it sounds odd, but like The Sting, 1973, is in the top 10 if you
for ticket sales,
like straight up ticket sales.
Well, I think too, that was, I'm just assuming that was a time where, like, obviously you didn't, it didn't like go to Blu-ray the day after it left theaters.
Sure. Right.
Like, if you wanted to see it again, to cough up $4 or $5 or whatever, you know.
And movies ran for a longer period of time.
There's an intermission in the middle of this thing, isn't there? Yeah, it's like a real... Man, what a great movie.
Yeah. So, actually, let's scrap movie. Let's talk about The Sting.
I just watched it this weekend, so yeah.
Oh, wonderful. So, I get it. Movies are different now. And when I first heard of MoviePass, last year, thought of this $10 thing, I was like, okay, as a theater and as, like, being part of Suns, I'm like, yeah, getting people in is pretty valuable. Even if you lose some money on the ticket, you get people buying concessions, which is where you make more of your money anyways.
Right.
Yeah.
It turns out MoviePass never really had a deal with these companies. They're basically, from everything we can gather, are paying pretty close to full price for your ticket.
Wow.
So they haven't, like, leveraged their big user base and subscriber base to, like, against the theaters. And now, as it is, like, AMC is just coming up with their own.
Right. Their Stubbs members deals.
Oh, they all have their A-list. Own loyalty clubs.
Yeah, now,
which,
exactly.
Which, to me, made a lot more sense from their perspective. Because they're all, you know, at each other's throats anyway. I used to work at the Movie Co. in Boca Raton. Yeah. And that's gone now because it probably, you know, didn't have a good enough model of loyalty rewards. And I got acquired by, like, Landmark or Cinemark,
Regal
or something.
Or somebody,
like Regal, one of the huge ones, or AMC maybe.
Yeah, so MoviePass works for all of these theaters. So maybe if they like leverage against them, hey, you want to be part of the MoviePass group, you have to give us this price of this. But they haven't really accomplished any of this. So in a investor meeting, the CEO slips that, oh, this isn't about movie tickets. This is actually about analytics. We're when people are using the app, we know when they leave their home, we know where they're going to get coffee after, we know all these things about them. Well, this made people a little pissed off.
Sure.
As it does.
Yeah, in light of, like, Facebook and everyone else, like, selling the hell out of all of our data, you find out that MoviePass, they're
right there.
The only model they can come up with is, like, oh, we think we can do what Facebook does and sell your data. So he got a lot of heat for it. And then in another interview, the CEO was like, no, what we meant is we could tell them where to get coffee.
Except there is nothing on our app to help you do that.
Yeah, they could just have it on their app, like, hey, you're at the movie? You just checked in? Want to get coffee somewhere?
Right. Yeah, no.
Do it on the way out?
It definitely has some major issues.
Yeah, and then you got a lot of writers fluffing up their work. So we had, like, Rob Kane from Forbes was blowing them up until they tanked in, like, December. So they went from, like, worth $3 a share to then going up to, like,
nothing.
They went up to, like,
39.
Yeah, to $37 a share
or something,
in October. So they were just skyrocketing. Now it's worth, like, 22 cents or whatever. So it's kind of funny how people did jump on the bandwagon, push it a lot. Now, at the end of all this, MoviePass is like, yeah, but we're going to work with movie distributors. So the first dumbass movie they could get to pair up with them was Gaudi, this John Travolta movie that's just been absolutely trash.
Panned by everyone.
Yeah, so it got panned by everyone. And then
it's got a 4.7 IMDb user rating.
Well, since they did the... Never mind IMDb, but you got to look at
Rotten Tomatoes.
Rotten Tomatoes is a good one. So they got a 0 on the tomato meter from critics. And then MoviePhone, running the marketing, tried to spin it like, what the hell do these snobs? What are these snobs?
Professional movie viewers?
Yeah. Right. These assholes, like, trust the viewers. Viewers say this is 92% or something. God. So it was like, don't believe the fake news. They really leaned into this shit.
Yeah, they really went like fake news on it, right? To the critics, calling the critics
frauds. That was the thing. Don't believe the critics. They're bullshit.
Believe the real people.
Believe the real people. Well, it turns out the real
true Scotsman.
The real people is totally... It doesn't seem that they're real. Turns out they had as many reviews opening weekend as Incredibles 2. They had more than Ocean's 8, even though no one saw this movie. And a lot of those profiles has been created in the 30 days before that. So they pretty much made a bunch of Rotten Tomatoes profiles, reviewed it well, just so they could pitch it this way. And they've had to pay for 40% of the tickets. So the only way MoviePass is going to make it is if they figure out how to scam us and sell our data, and right. I don't think they're going to figure it out. If they're back in Gaudi, they cannot be smart enough to figure this out.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they seem like transparently stupid and just bad at lying, but addicted to it as well, right?
I feel like they're just in over their heads, and they're trying to play to their big subscriber base, and they don't know what they're doing. You know, I'm probably the only guy who's got it. But you know, so for myself, I've just been using it every second I can. I go see every damn movie on.
And
this
to be
thing.
Fair, like you're using it and it's working.
Hey, it works. You know, I'd still maybe tell people like if it's still a cheap price, maybe use it. I cannot see this company surviving.
Yeah. They make it to the end of the year?
What's the thing?
Excuse
you
me. We have a caller on line 6.
Oh fuck.
Oh, we've got a caller.
Hey,
caller, help. You're on the air.
All right. Hey guys, this is Rob Kane. Is this the circle jerk of douchebags shit talking MoviePass?
Oh,
Hey, wait, Rob Kane.
Rob
nice.
Kane from Forbes.
That's his.
Yeah, Rob Kane.
Hey, no.
Rob Kane hanging out in Shenzhen, China, with all of my startup buddies, getting sideways chlamydia from Chinese hookers. You know,
dude. All I gather is that you're this you're a consultant for the Chinese film industry. I remember reading a few of your Forbes pieces.
And super psyched you called. I mean, we actually love to get some of your opinion on this.
Yeah, I bet you're super psyched that I called. And as a matter of fact, I do work for Forbes, and I do write about the Chinese movie industry, and I did write about MoviePass. So I don't know what you guys' deal is, but you clearly don't get what MoviePass is about. Okay, it doesn't matter if it makes any money, bro. You're not paying for it with money. You're paying for it with your data. Like, if you're engaged for 5 minutes on your cell phone, I know everything about you.
Well, I mean, all the stories coming out now, you haven't written about them recently, but all the stories that have been coming out are saying you got that MoviePass is like, what, $1.2 billion in debt and all this stuff. I mean, it doesn't look like they're going to make it through the year.
Yeah, try $4 billion in debt. Come on, this isn't some small potatoes operation like Jawbone or Frisbee or Quixel. Hey, what's up, Quixel guys? How you doing? We're at a rooftop right now, by the way. Partying.
Oh, wait. So are these like some other tech companies you're trying to write up? Or what is this? What do you guys do there?
No, this is a club of guys who had crappy stock, inflated it to a ridiculous degree, and then cashed out, baby. That's
damn.
What we do. And if that's failure, I'd call it failing upwards, if you know what I mean, my man.
Well, I mean, I don't know. We're kind of fans of good movies. We don't really necessarily care about the marketing of it. We just want, you know, good movies to get made.
Well, I have news for you. Good movies are dead. There's only financially sound movies and art house crap, okay?
Whoa.
Okay.
Well,
that's pretty strong.
I might. You're lucky David's not here because he'd be fuming. Okay.
Excuse me. Where are you calling from?
Oh, me? Just a little place called the Tianshan Mountains. Maybe you've heard of it. Or maybe you haven't because you're stupid. Look, guys. I already have everything I need. And I don't need some little pissant podcast telling me what is and isn't good movie business. I know good business, okay? And good business is leveraging your user base's data to sell it to advertising companies.
An asshole.
Wow, jeez, man.
Hey, you know what they say? If you want to make an omelet, I'm going to need your mother's maiden name. By the way, make sure to check out my new omelet app. It's called Umlaut. Not the word, just the diacritic mark.
Wait, an umlaut? What the hell app is that?
What's after that?
No, like, what kind of app is this?
Oh, well, it brings you a rubbery omelet via drone, and all I ask for in return is an original copy of your birth certificate.
Okay.
Well, I mean, that doesn't...
And by the way, 3, 2, 1, that's 5 minutes. Thanks for the data, boners. Enjoy seeing ads for shit you didn't even know you needed. Peace. Click.
Wait, did he just click?
Damn.
Did Rob Kane just punk us? Whoa, shit, man. I'm already getting spam on my phone already right now. What the hell? Well, okay, I guess Kane isn't the softball reporter I thought he was. Seems to know what he's doing. Well, anyways, my MoviePass rant is over. I do think it symbolizes that we're all just being...
Was that a clip from Silicon Valley, or was that a live caller?
I think that was probably... I don't know if we can legally say this, so I'm going to say my guess is that that was the real Rob Kane from Forbes.
I mean, if I had to guess, I would guess.
I mean, he said his name was Rob Kane, the Forbes writer.
He did say that.
Well, anyways, he punked us. So, Jason and I have seen a couple movies lately. Let's talk about the movies we've seen.
Nice segue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gosh, man, it's been a lousy, lousy year. And I think there's been a couple of bright spots. I think maybe we found two of them this year.
I think so.
We both saw Hereditary.
Yeah, let's go Hereditary. I used MoviePass to see it. So
there you go.
Give me your feel.
Totally recommend it as a popcorn movie. Like go have a good time. It's definitely the kind of thing you want to watch in the theater with other people because it's got the jumps and the scares. Mm-hmm. I remember I went with a group of people, but I leaned over to one of the people I was with when it was happening just at the beginning. And I said, yeah, stars Toni Collette.
Who is wonderful in the movie.
And I said to the person sitting next to me, you know, when she was going on one of her first scenes, and I always forget how good Toni Collette is. She's one of those people that I don't regularly think about, but at the same time, every time I see her, I'm like, oh yeah, she's so good. And Hereditary is another fine example of just how good she is. But just a quick rundown. Basically, this movie's, you know, set up as after the family matriarch passes away, the grieving family is haunted by kind of tragic and disturbing occurrences and begins to unravel dark secrets about the family. And it just kind of spirals from there into a true Hollywood horror film. And it got a lot of comparisons. I think early on people were kind of propping it up maybe a little bit more than it should have been.
Are a little unfair. You know, The Exorcist was tossed around a lot.
Right.
And that's a very high bar.
Yeah, it's a super high bar. But in a year of what I've considered pretty poor outings from Hollywood, Hereditary was like, I walked out and was like, money well spent.
Yeah.
You know, happy I saw it.
Yeah, it definitely had some critiques at certain parts and certain things, but that's... I mean, you're going to have opinions on movies, especially if there's like room for things to be a little fantastic. I would say overall, the acting, the cinematography, and the score and sound was...
And just the tropes of a horror film. All of the tropes worked.
Yeah, and they were all tight, yeah, and well executed. So just for that alone, as a horror movie, it's... Yeah.
In the land of horror films where 99% are just garbage.
Yeah, which is cool.
Sure, yeah. No, I love bad horror films too, but to see a good one was welcoming.
Yeah.
I would say that.
So like 4 weeks after the release of Hereditary, we've got a decent review that says you should see it. But I think it's continued to do well weekend after weekend, which is nice. It does mean people are talking about it, people are telling each other about it, and it was worth seeing.
Yeah.
I just went on Sunday to see Sorry to Bother You.
Ooh, yeah. Tell us about
that. Boots Riley film. It was...
These are both first-time feature film makers, I believe, right?
For Boots Riley and
for Ari Aster, who directed Hereditary.
Wow, I did not know that.
He'd done like a handful of shorts before, but this was his first feature film.
Yeah, Sorry to Bother You. It has certain feelings of a first time movie in good and bad things. It obviously was something that Boots Riley had worked on for years. McSweeney's, I think, had published the script in 2012, an earlier version of it, just as a cool story because it has right. all these great concepts in it. It follows a character, Lakeith Stanfield plays...
Who's getting like all the press in the world, by the way.
As he should. He's so great in Atlanta. He's great in Get Out. He plays Cassius Green, who gets a job as a telemarketer. And it just goes into the mind-numbing, horrible job that I imagine it is to be a telemarketer. And it has a cool sense of like magical realism in that. But the movie just gets more and more over the top, fantastic, real out there. Probably like by the last fifth of the movie, it's getting real wild. And I didn't see that it was going that direction, which was nice. It makes it a different movie than I expected.
Right.
But I don't even want to give any part of it away. Now that I've seen it, I'm like, I think that was the only way for it to go. It really accomplishes something really fun and creative in this weird direction it goes.
Right.
Armie Hammer is... we talk about this. Like other movie, he's pretty good.
I think he's generally good. He does some bad... He's in some not so great things, but he's generally good. And when the material is kind of in his wheelhouse...
Uh-huh.
Like he just crushes, and it sounds like that's
like
what
Lone Ranger
here.
Or something, yeah. where he just kills it. No, he's great in this. He almost reminds me of his role in The Social Network in this,
right?
Because it takes place in Oakland, so they're clearly kind of critiquing tech world, gentrification
right.
world. The movie is definitely I recommend anyone to see it. It's very heavy-handed on its economic critique, but that's what it's got to be, especially from Boots Riley. So
right.
It all comes together as like a pretty funny movie. I had a couple friends who didn't like it, but I went with a bunch of communists and anarchists, and to hear their praise for it after the movie was half the point of going to see this movie
right.
with them. They were just, no, but you got to understand like what Marx is talking about. It's like, yeah, we saw the movie. It's pretty easy right. to understand that like, yeah, you're getting ripped off if you're a worker at a telemarketing company. But yeah, we're seeing. That's
all
my
right.
take.
Excellent. So a couple of decent films out there in the wasteland that is 2018 at the movies.
All right. Should we call it a day before anyone else disappears?
Yeah,
Max is gone. Rob Kane hung up on us. David
yeah, I've got a call to the cops on that phone call.
Oh, good.
Tracking that caller down.
Excellent.
I don't feel safe.
God damn it. Are any of you guys getting fucking ads for Umlaut? Umlaut, whatever this is? It looks like, it's like an Umlaut, but made out of two eggs. I hate it. All right.
Love it.
I guess we're good.
All right.
I think that'll do it.
That's a wrap.
Here with Pied Piper CEO Richard Hendricks and newly minted COO Jared Dunn. Today's a big day for you. Tell me what your new internet is and why Gavin Belson should be afraid of it.
Manure?
Pardon?
Oh, weird. Okay, well, that went straight to Jared.
I'm sure you're aware of the great London horse manure crisis of 1894.
I'm afraid I'm not.
In the 1890s. The Industrial Revolution had people flocking to the city, and more people equals more horses, and more horses equals more manure. And it was predicted that by the middle of the next century, there would be 9 feet of manure covering the streets. But what no one saw coming was a new technology that would completely obliterate those concerns, the car. Overnight, the manure problem vanished, and the internet, as we currently know it, is rife with identity theft and spam and hacking. So it's manure, and we believe that in success, our new, entirely decentralized internet will be just as significant as the car.
Hmm. Now back to me for my theme park analogy.
Thanks for coming in, guys. Up next.
What?
Wow, Jared landed it. That was great. Jared was so good.
I guess they must have gotten rid of my stuff for time.
Yeah, they try and keep it just to the interesting stuff.
Yeah, I guess so.